Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. When you're reading a novel or watching a movie or a TV show, do you ever put yourself in the shoes of the author, especially when there's a situation that requires a very clever way of solving a problem, or when the hero gets cornered and can't seem to find a way out? Do you ever put yourself in the mindset of the author and go, okay, well, what would I do here? How would I solve this problem? Because it seems like we end up with those situations all the time, whether it's watching a movie and you have some sort of action sequence, or it's some sort of complex situation where multiple characters converge right at the same time at a certain location, then everything seems to play out in a way where it feels like if you were there, you'd be stuck. You wouldn't know what to do. You'd be trapped. And yet, time and time again, these authors seem to find ways to make things work out. And sometimes it's not so great because they just break the fourth wall, or they come up with some sort of deus ex machina, the ghost in the machine that just saves the day. But sometimes they end up with these really clever or even just realistic ways that the characters can go about solving this problem, even though just a few moments earlier you felt like there was no real good answer. In today's episode, Bilbo is handling the spiders, but he's getting deeper and deeper into the situation and has to figure out how to actually save the dwarves while they are hung up in the trees in spiderwebs while being surrounded by spiders. This doesn't seem like a very easy scenario to deal with. If you could imagine yourself climbing up in a tree with a sword and yet hundreds of spiders around you while you are trying meticulously to save a bunch of dwarves who have been poisoned and are on the edge of death, what would you do in that situation? It seems like there's no real easy way out, or maybe even any way out at all. But this isn't specific to Tolkien. He is an author among many other authors who have dealt with this kind of dilemma. And here are a few examples of similar types of situations from authors, or at least stories that you might be familiar with. So one good example is Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, famous for Sherlock Holmes. And you can imagine writing a character like Sherlock Holmes, who always seems to come up with a clever solution that nobody seems to have been able to figure out except for him. And this was very taxing on the good Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I don't know if he's necessarily a good person, but maybe. I don't know. I'm not saying one way or the other. But Sir Arthur Conan Doyle grew tired of writing Sherlock Holmes because things were just becoming kind of difficult. He considered that, for the most part, he'd done such a good job previously with his writings, coming up with clever and dramatic situations. And then, of course, these life and death struggles with Moriarty and all of that, that the pressure was mounting. And so he attempted to stop writing these stories, but they were so popular and his fans kept requesting more stories. So he went back to it, but it didn't make it any easier to solve these kinds of problems. Another good example of this would be somebody like George R.R. Martin, who traditionally has had very complex scenarios with multiple point of view characters and individuals and nations and these kinds of scenarios. One, if you're familiar with The Dance of Dragons, there's this plot line where all of these different individuals and situations kind of convene in on the city of Meereen, and he had to set that up in a way where it felt natural. It didn't feel contrived. And yeah, that's not a situation per se where you have a hero surrounded by spiders or something like that, but it is a situation that is complex and needed a realistic solution so that the story could play out the way that he wanted it to play out. And that's just one example. If you read through the rest of A Song of Ice and Fire, there are a lot of scenarios where it seems like there's a dilemma and there's no way out. And sometimes what he actually does is he does the realistic thing. Spoilers, but certain people die in situations where you think, oh, they're going to find a way out of this, and then they don't. And sometimes that's his solution to the problem. Another famous example of this sort of thing would be the TV show Lost. If you go back, what was that, 15, 20 years ago, almost, 20 years ago at this point, the TV show Lost had all these really interesting cliffhangers and dilemmas that the characters would end up in, and the world itself was so mysterious. And the writers seemed to kind of back themselves into a corner, and the show was famous and still is kind of famous for being really good up until you got to the last season, and then all of a sudden things kind of fell apart. It could have been better, but that's the situation that happens when you kind of write yourself into a corner and you're not really sure the best way to make your way out. And this is very, very common. And I get the sense that oftentimes Tolkien would do this as well. He wasn't the kind of person who would think forward to the solution of the problem and then invent the problem backwards. In fact, he was often somebody who would write the story and get up to a dilemma and then get stuck and then go back and rewrite the story up until he solves that dilemma and then moves on to the next one and then gets stuck again and then comes up with another solution. So as I read through The Hobbit, this is one of those scenarios where I feel like there are some hints in the text that show that he, along with Bilbo and the dwarves, had to struggle to come up with a solution to the problem. He couldn't just have Gandalf show up and save the day. That was now Bilbo's job. And so it needed to make sense for Bilbo. He wasn't a wizard. Sure, he had a magic ring and a magic sword and his wits, and that was it. So how do we get through this situation? Well, let's go check it out. So we left off last time with Bilbo, of course, leading the spiders away and then sneaking back to get to the dwarves. And in the situation we're in now, he realizes that he has to somehow rescue all of them specifically, individually. He has to go up to each of them. It's not just about taking out the spiders. There's no way he could take on all of the spiders. There's just too many. So he has to find a way up into the trees. He has to figure out how to get them down in a way that doesn't harm them. And this becomes a difficult scenario, especially because he only has a limited amount of time before the spiders return, and the dwarves themselves are in really bad shape here. It says in the first paragraph of our text this week that the worst part of the job was getting up to the long branch where the bundles were dangling. And you have to imagine, he's a little guy. He has to climb up these these gigantic trees and through these webs and find a way to do that. And the solution to this problem was that a spider had luckily left a rope hanging down. Now, I'd imagine this is an actual thread, and it was harming him. It hurt him to hold on to this, but yet he did it because he had to make it anyway. And this is the first scenario of the situation where we go, okay, I guess I could see how that is a realistic solution. There would be these strands from the webs that are hanging down, and he could use it to climb up, but it wouldn't be easy, and it would be very difficult, especially on his hands, to hold on to something like this that actually harmed him as he climbed. The next piece of this realistic scenario comes when he runs across an old, slow-witted, fat-bodied spider who remained behind to guard the prisoners. This also makes sense. Why would the spiders all run off to try to find this invisible creature who's taunting them when they have such a wonderful dinner waiting for all of them? Somebody would have stayed back to protect them. So this is the one who did. And on top of it, they're realistic because, remember, these are evil creatures. They're selfish. This one was thinking about starting the feast while the others were away and started poking the dwarves. But then Bilbo responds, and before the spider knows what is happening, it felt his sting. And I love the phrase here, it felt his sting, because it's a double meaning. It felt the sting of the sword, but it also felt the sword named Sting, which was named after stinging these spiders. So there's this wonderful connection here into the sword really bearing out its name. And then in typical Tolkien fashion, he lays out the next step in the process. The next thing to do is to loose a dwarf. And I love the use of the word loose here, as in like the verb loose, to let loose a dwarf. Or let loose an arrow, that sort of thing. But now used as a verb, to loose a dwarf. And I think this is specifically chosen for this section because he's not just letting them free. It doesn't say to free a dwarf, but to loose them. They are tangled up. And they're tangled up in a situation where if he were to just cut all the strands that were binding them, they would be loosed off to the ground below. And they may have become very injured or died from the fall. So he has to figure out this scenario as well. And he comes across one of them, and they appear to be either Filly or Killy. They have a blue hood. They have a nose sticking out. And then he's like, oh, it's most likely Filly because of the longer nose. I love that he notices these details among them. And then he leans over and he starts cutting the strongest threads. And it says here, with a kick and a struggle, most of Filly emerged. I'm afraid Bilbo actually laughed at the sight of him jerking his stiff arms and legs as he danced on the spider string under his armpits, just like one of those funny toys bobbing on a wire. Now, you'll notice throughout this text, there's kind of a return to these funny moments or funny phrases or humorous situations. And part of that is because they are in a dire situation and we need some comedic relief here. But also, it paints a picture. The idea of Filly still holding on to some threads underneath his armpits and like wriggling around trying to get himself out of this scenario while most of them are cut. That's the solution to the problem. You don't cut all of them. You cut some of the main ones, but then you leave a support thread or two hanging there for him to hang from in order to work his way off of this. And realistically, even though Filly is able to make it out of here, he is feeling extremely sick and ill from the poison still. He has a limited amount of ability to help Bilbo continue to free the others, yet he still tries. And in another detail that again reinforces the reality of the situation in a fantasy story, he has so much spiderweb tangled up on him that it takes him some extra time to kind of pull it all off, but it's also all in his beard. And he has to cut off most of his beard in order to deal with this. Now, it doesn't say in this section about the others and their beards, but I would imagine many of them left the situation with a much shorter trimmed beard than they would have liked. And that is an interesting thing to note because they are dwarves. They take pride in the length of their beards. The length of their beards shows, in some ways, their seniority. This is one of the details I found very interesting about the movie adaptation of The Hobbit, in that characters like Thorin had a very short, trimmed up beard. And this is one of those things that I'm assuming that the production team and everybody involved, because they're so aware of the writings and those kinds of things, would have made this as a very difficult decision. They did it so that the character came across a little bit more younger, handsome, virile, which isn't a word I say out loud very often. So I had to double check that that was actually the word that I meant or how to even pronounce it. But yeah, there's a change there, right? Like, why do some of the dwarves have shorter beards in the movie? Well, they had reasons for doing it, but it kind of goes against the lore in some ways. So this plays into the reality of the situation. At some point, they have to make their sacrifice to trim their beards in order to get the webs out, because what use is a long beard if it's all stuck with web? And then we swing back to some of the more humorous bits about the length of noses. Some had hardly been able to breathe at all. Long noses are sometimes useful, you see. And then we get the rundown. So we've got Philly and then Killy, Biffer, Boffer, Dory, and Nori, who are the first group that are rescued. And then, of course, they struggle with poor old Bomber. He was so exhausted. He was the fattest and had been constantly pinched and poked. Yet he just rolled off the branch and fell plop onto the ground, fortunately onto leaves, and lay there. And so this is fortunate for him, right? Now, notice it doesn't use the word lucky. It uses fortunate. Lucky seems reserved, at least so far, for Bilbo. But he was fortunate. He lands on some leaves, cushions his fall. He's not damaged that badly, but he's been through it. Poor Bomber has gotten the worst of this forest so far. And in another situation that leads me to feel like this is a realistic portrayal, they're not able to get all the dwarves free before the spiders start returning. This would have taken them a while. And again, they are not in the best shape. And so there are still five more dwarves who are stuck up in these webs in the trees when the spiders begin to return. And then Bilbo responds. Bilbo immediately went to the end of the branch nearest the tree trunk and kept back those that crawled up. And throughout this whole entire scenario, we have numerous times where Bilbo steps up, puts himself in immediate danger in order to protect the party. His bravery is, I don't know if there's a way to rate bravery, but it's a 10 out of 10. He keeps putting himself out there. And on top of that, he has forgotten to put the ring back on again. And I find this an interesting note. He already has saved a number of the dwarves. He hasn't told them about the ring yet. So to put it back on while they're all there would have been very confusing. And yet he seems to have forgotten about it, which seems like an easy justification. But then again, he's been busy. He hasn't really thought about that. And now he's having to deal with the spiders again. And then we get this saying from the spiders as they are returning. It says, "Now we see you, you nasty little creature. We will eat you and leave your bones and skin hanging on a tree. Ugh, he's got a sting, has he? Well, we'll get him all the same, and then we'll hang him head downwards for a day or two." And I find this, it's both terrifying to be hung from the tree and then have your bones and skin hanging off the tree after they consume your juicy innards or whatever they would be justifying here. But it's also oddly specific, not just the he'll eat you and hang your bones and skin hanging on a tree. Yeah, that seems like, you know, a frightening visual, right? But then this piece about we'll hang him head downwards for a day or two. Like, oh, and by the way, while we taunt you, here's part of our recipe for how we deal with the things that we capture. It seems a little bit overly specific, but it is what it is. And this buys time. This buys time for the dwarves who have been freed to use their knives. And remember, they keep extra knives on their belts or, you know, in their pockets or wherever they keep them. And although they're exhausted, they're able to have enough time through Bilbo defending them from the spiders to get the rest down. You know, it's hard to pick what I like the most about Rosetta Stone. I mean, first of all, they make learning another language so much easier, and all of us can become a lot closer to J.R.R. Tolkien in that sense, and yet he didn't have access to Rosetta Stone, but that gives us an upper hand. We can learn faster, we can retain the information longer, we can improve our pronunciation without having to be in a room full of native speakers. We can learn anytime and anywhere, and all of that is what makes this incredible. But beyond all that, there's even better news. 50% off lifetime membership right now. That's what you can get. That's 25 languages. That's a mobile app, a desktop app. You can use it anywhere you want. It's kind of incredible when you think about it. Lifetime membership, 25 languages you could learn for the rest of your life. So don't wait. Unlock your learning potential right now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
But then we have this sentence. Soon all would be free, though it was not clear what would happen after that. And I feel like this is an admission. This is Tolkien saying out loud, well, I've been able to figure out how they've solved this puzzle so far, but not really clear about where it's going next. It's almost like he's admitting that to us as the readers. But it also plays, I would imagine the original intent of the writing of this was, oh, they're not out of the trouble yet because who knows what's going to happen next, right? It's still ratcheting up the tension, but it does feel a little bit like a personal admission. And then we get this line at the end of that paragraph. This time there looked like being a horrible battle. Now, let me read that again. This time there looked like being a horrible battle. This does not sound like a sentence any of us would write. This time there looked like being a horrible battle. Like, what? So I did a little bit of research around this sentence because clearly you don't edit Tolkien. There's a reason why he wrote this sentence the way he did. And there are a number of explanations, potential explanations for why this sentence stands out so differently than the others to our post-Tolkien ears. The first is that there's an imitation here of a 19th century English sort of style, because as we know, he was highly influenced by 19th century literature, writers like William Morris, George MacDonald, and this type of grammatical construction was more acceptable during that time period. And it even kind of feels a little bit more formal or even poetic in the way that it would have been phrased. So if you take there looked like being, this is an impersonal construction, and it's similar to there seems to be or there appears to be. So in this example from the text, instead of using a full clause like that there would be a battle, which is more like what we would say, Tolkien uses the gerund being as a more immediate or concrete way of referencing the event. It's almost like saying a horrible battle seemed imminent, but in a passive form. So if that makes sense, like it is intentional, but he's making it feel more definitive or imminent that the situation had played out a certain way. But now, although it seemed like there might have been a battle, there definitely will be one, but yet phrased in kind of an archaic form. So at least that's what I was able to figure out so far. If you have a better explanation for this and you're more of a grammaticist than I am, then please chime in and let me know. So Bilbo suddenly notices that the spiders have now gathered around Bomber on the floor, and they've tied him up again and they've dragged him away. And this makes sense. Bomber is separated from the rest of the group at this point. So he has to run out again, another heroic moment, and he has to cut down the spiders. And we get another perspective from them about the sword. It says here, his little sword was something new in the way of stings for them, which follows up on something we previously talked about on the previous episode. And then I love the phrasing here, how it darted to and fro. It shone with delight as he stabbed at them. And this is another one of those personifications of a thing that gives this sense that something magical almost has its own will, its own awareness, its own interpretation of the situation that's going on. And this is not a foreign thing to fairy tales by any means. And here Bilbo's doing the work. Half a dozen were killed, and then the rest of them drew away from Bomber and left them. And then he yells up to the others, come down, don't stay up there and be netted. because he saw that they were climbing up the other trees and starting to surround the rest of the dwarves, which would make sense. There are so many of them that they're going to be manipulating the situation to their advantage, and they're going to be hunting them as a group. They're going to be surrounding them. So again, another thing that feels real for this kind of scenario, they've outnumbered them. And yeah, Bilbo's stabbing a whole lot of them, but there's so many more that they wouldn't give up at this point. So they all make their way down, and they are now on the ground together, all together, everybody. And they're not doing so well. And we get this update on the numbers. Hundreds of spiders, angry spiders, were goggling at them all round and about and above. Goggling. I love that use of the word, like looking at them with like eyes that are focused in on them specifically from every side, round, about, and above. They are completely surrounded. And he even says here, it looked pretty hopeless. Then the very next paragraph starts with, then the battle began. They haven't been in a battle yet. They've been trying to free themselves and, well, Bilbo's been holding them back. But now we get a battle. The dwarves have their knives and some sticks, and they all can find stones, and Bilbo has this elvish dagger. And although many of them are not in a great situation, they are still able to put up some amount of a fight. Enough so that this is actually called a battle. But then, almost as quickly as it starts, we get this part of the same paragraph. It says, but it could not go on for long. Bilbo was nearly tired out. Only four of the dwarves were able to stand firmly, and soon they would all be overpowered like weary flies. Now, let me break this down, because there's more to this. Bilbo, being pretty tired out by this point, makes sense. He's been running around, he's been fighting, he's been killing dozens of them at this point. So yes, that would absolutely be exhausting. And also climbing up on ropes, he's got to be exhausted at this point. But then also, only four of the dwarves were able to stand firmly. And remember, the dwarves have to plant themselves firmly on the ground to then wield their full strength to swing their axes or whatever. And in this case, they don't even have axes. Then we also get the analogy here to weary flies, like they are being trapped by the spiders. The next sentence says, already the spiders were beginning to weave their webs all round them again from tree to tree. So they've come up with a plan to corner them and not necessarily assault them directly so much as limit their escape, and then continue to trap them in the web so that they can't get away. This makes sense. The spiders don't have to get close. They just have to contain them. And this is how we know this has become a very desperate situation. In the end, Bilbo could think of no plan except to let the dwarves into the secret of his ring. He was rather sorry about it, but it could not be helped. I'm going to disappear, he said. I shall draw the spiders off, if I can, and you must keep together and make in the opposite direction. To the left there. That is more or less the way towards the place where we last saw the elf fires. He has to tell them that, hey, I'm going to disappear. But notice he doesn't mention the ring in the dialogue. He just says, I'm going to disappear. And of course, they're confused, they're dizzy, they don't fully understand, they're busy, they're preoccupied. And then he slips on the ring, and to the great astonishment of the dwarves, he vanishes. And then, of course, he starts taunting them again. And this works really well. Lazy Lob and Attercop, and of course, Attercop makes them so angry that they lose their wits. And this is another reminder that the spiders are intelligent creatures, and they're evil intelligent creatures, and they get angry. They don't like to be taunted. They don't like to be underestimated or made fun of, which makes you wonder who else in their existence has treated them that way. It seems like something orcs lost in the forest might do, or a more powerful entity trying to put them in their place. I'm not implying anything specifically, but just the fact that this has such a strong reaction kind of implies that they've had this sort of thing happen to them before. Then Balin steps up. Notice it's Balin here. He's the one who figures out Bilbo's plan here, which makes sense. Balin is very clever, but he's also very brave and in some cases not afraid of wielding weapons of war. Remember, Balin is the one who goes to take back Moria. Well, he leads the attack. They all huddle in this knot, and then they all start throwing stones at the same time and burst through the left side of the ring, directly in the path that Bilbo had recommended they go. And this seems to work. They're making their way forward very slowly, very wobbly, hobble into wobble. There are two words that are used here. But they make it, and every so often they have to turn back and defend themselves from the back. But for the most part, Bilbo has drawn off a significant portion of them. And then all of a sudden, when things were looking pretty bad again, of course, building up that tension, suddenly Bilbo reappeared. So, of course, this is astonishing to the spiders, but also they're afraid because the sting is back and Bilbo is there to help support the group moving forward. And he shouts, "Go on, go on. I will do the stinging." And he darts back and forwards, slashing at spider threads, hacking at their legs, stabbing at their fat bodies if they came too near. The spiders swelled with rage and sputtered and frothed and hissed out horrible curses. And in the very last part of this section, another piece that really links together the reality of the situation. They had become mortally afraid of Sting and dared not come very near, now that it had come back. And this makes sense. Creatures who see other creatures get hurt by something or get hurt by it themselves become extra weary about that. There are debates about how deadly actual altercations are between different species in the wild, or even early humans among different societies. And we often think back to these kinds of scenarios, creatures hunting other creatures or early warfare. And we think, well, lots of people probably died. That became a very vicious situation. And undoubtedly, that's true. But the thing is that when you're in the wild and you're in a situation like early humanity or wild creatures out there, even small wounds can become infected and threaten the lives of the people or the creatures who are wounded. It's not like you can go to the hospital when you're a tiger attacking or defending your, pride from some other predator who happens to be in the area, or you're somebody who is using early tools in order to defend your tribe. Small wounds are a big deal. So most people and most creatures avoid conflict. In fact, most of what they do is to try to threaten and humiliate and intimidate the enemy so that the enemy gives up or runs away. That's most likely what happens. And humans in early societies hunted in large groups, and they would use very smart, careful ways of capturing their prey so that they didn't become injured. We kind of have this backwards view of these things because today, yeah, nobody wants to get hurt, but you can go to the hospital. Even armies have field medics and ways of dealing with severe wounds that keep people from dying. So all that's to say that it makes sense that in this scenario, the spiders would become afraid. This group has shown that, yeah, they're weak and they're desperate, but they are also extremely dangerous whenever the spiders get too close. But they had become mortally afraid of Sting and dared not come very near now that it had come back. So curse as they would, their prey moved slowly but easily away. It was a most terrible business and seemed to take hours. But at last, just when Bilbo felt he could not lift his hand for a single stroke more, the spider suddenly gave it up and followed them no more, but went back disappointed to their dark colony. So thank you for the birthday wishes and the patience with taking the week off. It was my birthday last week, and I had a very nice, I took the week off. I didn't go anywhere. I just relaxed at home, and it was refreshing to be able to just kind of decompress I couldn't not do anything because, of course, I have to take care of, running the network and all the other things that I do. But having some time off was very, very helpful, and I'm feeling way more renewed. And also, during the week, pitch the idea. If you're not on the Patreon, go log into the Patreon. Sign up as a free member. You're going to see these kinds of posts. But I posted the question about, should I do a thing that my wife came up with? She suggested that since I do a Gollum voice, that it would be really funny to do an advice show as Smeagol. And so I posted this on the Patreon, and a lot of you responded very positively to this idea and then even started posting questions that an advice column would answer. So this week, the bonus episode is Precious advice with Smeagol, and I haven't recorded it yet. I'm a little worried my impression will start to crack and show some of the flaws in it, but I'm gonna get through it. We're gonna see what we can do, and it should be at least a fun one-off. And if it works out really well, who knows? Maybe this will be a reoccurring thing, or who knows? And maybe if it's so good, I'll just make it a separate podcast. That might be hilarious. So if you want to check that out, I'm going to make this an episode that's available for everybody. You just have to go to the Patreon to get it. It's going to be available for free patrons and all the paid patrons. Usually, bonus episodes are just for people at or above the bonus tier. And ad-free episodes are for the base tier, and this is going to go up for everybody because it's going to be a lot of fun, hopefully. And now I'm adding more pressure because it's going to be something a lot more people are going to be able to listen to, but I hope you enjoy it. And also, you'll get to join for free on the Patreon, which means you'll get future updates and notifications. And sometimes there's like deals. Sometimes Patreon offers deals to people who have just kind of been around as free patrons and want to try out one of the tiers or whatever. So go check that out over on the Patreon, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast, or there's a link in the show notes. Anyway, thank you for your support and all these fun ideas. And I probably won't be able to get to all the questions, but I'll pull some of the ones that make the most sense for Smeagol to answer, and we'll see how that goes. But also, thank you so much for all of your continued support on the Patreon. We have some new patrons and some of the existing patrons, in fact, a bunch of the VIP patrons that I have to shout out. So here, let's get to the new ones who have signed up in the last few weeks. A big welcome to Benedict, Pierre B., Avarial, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Justina M., Alex H., Dreadfish Games, and Single Ent Looking for Entwives. I love it. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you are here, and thank you for your support. And let's see if I can get through the VIP patrons. We have AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Avarial. Oh, that's going to get me every time. If I can pronounce that better, please comment and let me know. Azzle Razzle, Barney D., Bo, Brandy D., Cali Cat, Captain Legolas Turner, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B., Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huon Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie S., Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Single Ent Looking for Entwives, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor 97. Thank you so much, all of you. And also, if you'd like to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to this on, that would be wonderful. But if you leave a review on Apple, I'll be able to read that out on a future episode if it's here in the US. But if it's anywhere else, that's still very, very helpful. And it's the smallest little thing you could possibly do that would be so, so beneficial to making sure that this show is still easily found by people looking for this kind of content. So I couldn't do it without all of you. I appreciate you so much. And I'm going to go get ready to do Smeagol, Precious Advice with Smeagol. So let's go see how that goes. I'll see you over on the Patreon. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.